You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. I'm a big Patrick Glencioni fan. I've been listening to his podcast. So lately he's been just jumping on. He's like, I have actually told my team. They have no idea what we're going to be talking about. And they're like, yeah, we have no idea. And we're just going to make it up on the fly. And those are my favorite episodes. Like, I'm like, yes. She actually doesn't know what he's going to say. Like, it's so great. Like, they're just, and so if you're listening right now, I figured this is the first time I've ever done this. I'm just going to roll with it. So I'm on with Katrina Sanders, who I'm going to tell a quick story, and then I don't even know what you're going to talk about, but I'm going to do an intro, and then you take us from there, and I'll have your back the whole time. I'm going to take a whole bunch
of
notes.
Let's do it. I like it. I like it. This is
so
great.
The great Katrina Sanders, you know, and so I first met you when the pandemic happened, and I was sharing with you, I had a full like panic attack, and then we put together this conference, and then Adriana's like, we got to get the Katrina Sanders woman. And I'm like, who is that? She's like, are you kidding me? She's amazing. And so I got you on the first time, and I was telling you this, like I had Bill Robbins, Bob Marges, and like these guys are clinical minds that I can only try to understand what they're talking about. And as soon as you finished, we do a wrap up at the end of the day. They're like, dude, she was amazing. Holy moly. Aww. Like, not only were you fun, but you were engaging. And then you brought this whole other component of like, you were drinking wine. Now we were too, but you couldn't see us doing it. Because that's what we were just trying to figure things out. And then we had you back again and again and again. You've been in our masterclass series, and our paths have intersected. And so a lot of people know who you are, and you've created your own path. But I want people that are listening today, before we pick out the subject that you're going to pick out, I want people to know your story. Like, give us a little bit of who's Katrina Sanders? What are you doing?
Oh my gosh. I love this. Okay. So, well, first of all, thank you so much for having me back. I appreciate it. I'm always like, isn't Kirk sick of me? But like, thank you so much for not being sick of me. This is awesome. My name is Katrina Sanders. I am a practicing dental hygienist here in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm from Wisconsin originally, which is one of the many reasons why you and I connect so well. I grew up in a suburb of Milwaukee, did undergrad at the University of Minnesota, go Gophers, and then moved down here to Arizona, where I now practice for a large perio specialty group here in Arizona called AZ Perio. My job is super cool. I don't work in typical perio maintenance or prophy patient experiences. I'm in the surgical suite with the doctor.
Whoa.
So when doctors are performing these advanced surgical cases, I'm with the doctor. And then I also see all of doctor's new patients to the practice, which is just an incredible way to really see this disease process and to guide patients through their care, which is amazing. But that's what I do about 10% of the time. The rest of the time, I am known lovingly in the dental community as the dental wine genist. And, you know, it's so funny because I got my start in speaking and consulting. I knew I wanted to be a speaker. In fact, this is so random. When I was in hygiene school, I had to fill out a career development manual.
Okay.
This was like my senior year, my last class of hygiene school. And I had to fill this out about like where I saw myself in 5 years and where I saw myself in 10 years as a professional. And I knew, I mean, it's so weird. I read this the other day my handwriting, Katrina, senior dental hygiene student, I knew at that time that I was going to expand beyond clinical dentistry into other arenas. And it's so weird because my 10-year plan after I graduated in 2007, my 10-year plan was that I was going to be a published author, that I was going to be traveling and speaking, that I was going to be a consultant. That was literally what I had written that I wanted to do. And it's so random because here I am doing all of those insane, amazing, fabulous, fun things. And I say that.
Okay, wait a minute. Wait a minute. How old are you right now? Can I just ask? I got to ask.
Yeah, you can. You
I'm
can
not
totally
supposed
ask
to
him.
Ask that, but I got to know.
You can totally ask.
No, just tell
that.
Me.
I'm 36.
Well, here's what I'm thinking, because I thought you'd be in your mid-30s. You got to set some new goals because you already hit them. Like,
I know. It's crazy.
You know, like, I'd love to tell you my story is similar, but I flunked out of Minnesota. You actually made it through. And then you said,
wait,
10
you
years
flunked out of Minnesota?
Well,
stop it.
Let's not use the word flunked out. I didn't, okay. I went there to walk on and play football, and I didn't pay attention to like academics. Is that
academics.
Fair?
Academics.
Well, yeah, then I transferred to University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. And then I was wow, I got good grades. The X factor was I actually went to class. So if you're listening, go to class. Okay.
Go
back. But 36 to be, I mean, you are respected in this industry. I mean, I was still trying to like get into meetings and sending like people like Greg Tice from SSC my videotape, and he threw it in the trash like 13 times. He told me that.
Oh, so he's like, throwing my stuff in the trash too. Don't worry.
You know, and like
Greg's
when
a tough one.
I know. And then when I see you on the road, see you doing what you're doing, I'm like, there she is again. That's awesome. So I have no doubt. The reason I say this, to do what you've done in your time, I can only imagine what the future is going to look like. And I'm just excited to call you my friend because we're going to have a 10-year anniversary on this show. I'm going to go, I had you on the show when you were 36. And like, look at that. Look at what you're doing now. And you're like, yeah, I did. I mean, whatever.
I
so,
know.
But I mean, you That's don't need so to good. Know you for very long to know that you're going to do something special. You're going to inspire people. And it's just awesome what you're doing. Now, before we get into our subject again, like, tell us about like, if I'm watching you, I watch you do what you do. You are very, like, your posts are very engaging. Like, it's very, so how does the social thing work with your, is it part of it? But it's more than that. You're in a movement. You're in a cause. What is it?
Yeah, that's what, thank you for acknowledging that. That's what I'm trying to do. I want to create something beyond I am a dental hygienist.
Right.
Because we're all more than that. And I think that when, as a speaker, the goal from a bottom line standpoint, when people ask me, what is it that you want to do? I want to inspire and I want to empower people. And the thing is, we can do that in a number of ways. I could put up a statistic and I could say 47.7% of adults between the ages of 30 and 79 have some form of periodontal disease, and yet 87% of those individuals receive a pro fee. So what's wrong? What are we doing here? You know? And I can certainly slap some facts at you. And hopefully that would get some people to go, oh, maybe I need to do something different. I could tell a heartfelt story, which I do. I've got a keynote about how we lost my mom suddenly, tragically, and unexpectedly. And the morning she collapsed in the kitchen, she had a doctor appointment that morning, and the doctor told her everything was fine. And then she collapsed and passed. And, you know, we're very devastated by what happened. And that's certainly a motivator. But I think the reality, Kirk, is that we're all humans and we all have a why. And it's not my responsibility to tell other people why in dentistry they should wake up in the morning, put on their scrubs, and treat their patients with respect, with kindness, with high level clinical awareness and prowess. I mean, that's for them to decide. And so what I've done is I've worked to create or lead a charge of, this is me. This is who I am. Dentistry is amazing. But you know what? There are days when dentistry is not amazing. When the patient is like choking on ultrasonic water and you're just like, oh, here we go. You know what I mean? Or they're running late or whatever. We have to be able to see all these things for what they are. I'm also seen as a leader from a clinical standpoint. I walk in. In fact, I did this the other day. I put it on my stories. I walked into clinical practice and the team didn't know that I was treating patients that day. And I set it up. This was on my Instagram stories. I said, so I'm going to walk in through the front door. My team doesn't know that I'm walking in. Let's see how they react. And of course, I've got it on like selfie mode or whatever. I'm like, hey, you guys. And everybody's like, oh my gosh, you're here. This is so exciting. Like, they were so happy that I was there and that I was a part of the day. Oh my gosh, our day is going to be so fabulous now. And I said at the end of the video, does your team feel that way about you? You know, I want to create this world where dental hygienists, dentists, practice owners, assistants, front office team members, that we all understand that we're a part of something greater than ourselves. Yep. And in order to do that, we have to have an awareness of where we fit into all of that. And it has to be okay. You have to feel okay, you know, being in your own skin and not replicating or doing what somebody else has told you to do, but rather doing it because that's a part of your why. It's a part of your passion. It's a part of what gets you up in the morning. And so that's what I've tried to do. I've tried to create this layer of, I am a human first and foremost. I'm a trained human, but I'm a human and I am providing care to other people that have, you know, complexities, not just from a clinical standpoint, but who they are in their hearts.
Yeah.
That's the beautiful piece about what it means to work with humans.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful to be a part of that change.
Yeah. Whatever you're doing, it's working. And all of us want a little dose of it. Now, here's my other favorite part of this for any of you that's younger or just inspiring. Listen, you're doing it your own way, which I freaking love, which is I'm going to do it my own way. And like, you're so kind. Well, you're so nice. I don't even know that. When somebody gives you critical feedback, you can say to yourself, well, with all due respect, you can,
yes,
you know,
yep,
thank
there,
you.
Yeah. Which
thank
is
you
what
so
I say.
Much. Like, I hope you have a wonderful day, but I'm still going to be me. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So
yeah.
You are doing it.
That's I think the challenge. This is what it's always about. We talk about like core values, for example, right? Core values aren't for the day, the oath that you said on graduation day. That's not for the day when everything is going well and all the patients are showing up on time and your scrubs are perfectly pressed and you packed your lunch today and everything's just, no, your core values, who you are, your why, that message is for the moments when fit has hit the shan, you know, and you now have, you've got a, you know, troll who's messaging on social media. I had a troll on LinkedIn the other day, this gentleman, I did this post about, you know, I'm a dental professional and I can't remember what I said, but it was like, I'm a dental professional. And I am the one who's still suiting up and treating, you know, the community during this global health crisis. I am the one that is educated on the fact that if you have periodontal disease and you get COVID, that you could lose your life because of a disease that I am a partner in treating. You know, I am doing these things because I promised on my graduation day, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, that I would serve the community to the best of my ability. And it was just supposed to be an empowering message that, of course, garnered a lot of attention on LinkedIn because people thought, wow, this is what I'm doing. And a dentist went on and said, it's just a virus. It's just like the common cold. I don't know why you're making a big deal about it. You know, put a mask on and show up to work. And so I was like, ooh, I'm like cracking my knuckles. I'm like, okay, here we go. This is what disruption is all about. And so to your point, I replied to him and I said, with all due respect, doctor, many of us do not see this as just a virus. In fact, respectfully, some of us, myself included, lost family members like my daddy during this global health crisis. And for many of us, we recognize that we are putting ourselves at risk or could potentially infect our family members if we're not careful in how we proceed. So respectfully, I'm going to ask you to be kind in the comments that you're going to be placing in my feed on this post. And of course, he didn't say anything, but everybody was like, oh yeah, you know, I mean, it just, but that's the thing is that being a disruptor for me isn't about being crude or unkind. In fact, it's the opposite. It's about how do you rise above? How do you take that challenge? A doctor, I'm not a doctor. I have a master's degree. I don't have a doctorate. Right. But yet somebody who's more educated than I am is coming at me with this kind of vernacular. This is my opportunity to show the community, here's a way to handle this. And here's a way to handle it in a way that is kind and supportive and also helps color a different side or gives a different aspect that maybe this individual hadn't considered before. And that, in my opinion, is eloquence in disruption.
I freaking love that. What'd you say? You said the fit hits the shan. Is that what you said? No, I think you're bringing up a great point because people, I'm a huge fan of core values. Like, I think it's the single most important thing you do ever in business and person, because it's your flag in the ground. And most often people think, oh, you're going to use it in all these good things, and you do. But where you need that flag is when the tough stuff happens, when you have a difficult conversation, like you've got to make a tough decision. And all roads lead home to core values. Like, sometimes you don't know if you're going to take that road or that one. And you're like, what are our core values say? Don't you agree?
Yes, absolutely. I think one of the challenges that I run into, particularly when I'm working with my clients, is although they have these core values, I've got one client in particular who's got an amazing mission statement. Like, I love it. I'm like, this is amazing. And yet, just because we have a placard on the wall that says, these are our core values, does that actually mean that those core values show up?
Right.
And I think the cool thing about core values is the work around a core value never ends. And I have to do this. I'm a business owner, so I've had to build my own core values and then relay that to my team. These are the core values of the Dental Wine Genus brand, period. This is how we function. This is how we work. This is how we collaborate. This is how, you know, we communicate. Yet when you run into challenges, when you run into a situation in clinical practice with a patient, we have to take a step back and go, so did our core values show up in that moment? Mm-hmm. Did we practice with integrity? This patient showed up late, you know, and it totally disrupted our day. Were we able to adhere to our core values of high level, world-class dentistry when we had to cut short the appointment? I didn't have time to do an extra oral and an intraoral examination on this patient because the patient was running behind. That's when I think, A, our core values are questioned, and B, a true ethical provider or an ethical human. This is what causes us to struggle putting our head on our pillow at night and saying, I did a great job, right? Yep. That's where it's like, you know, you want to really upset a dental hygienist, tell him or her that if the patient declines active scaling and root planing, that they're going to be expected to do a prophy. You know, and I know that there are hygienists out there that work in practices like that, where they don't have anything built in to re-educate the patient or have strategies to move that patient into active periotherapy. So the idea being, I think the vast majority of us go to dental school, go to dental hygiene school. We become educated in dentistry because we actually do want to help people.
Yeah.
And yet our own core values, our own practice philosophy oftentimes comes into question, whether that's a patient questioning, oh, I don't know, the doctor said I need a crown on that tooth, but can't I just get away with a filling over there? Right. It's not even about you're questioning my clinical savvy. It's I'm telling you that you need, you know, doctor's saying you need a full coverage crown on this tooth because that is what's in the best interest of your tooth. He's not, or she, they're not doing this because they need another car payment on their Mercedes or whatever, you know what I mean? So, you know, it's when moments like that happen that we have to lean back on our core values. And if we're not able to fully live them, I do think that there are challenges with the satisfaction we feel in employment. I think that there are layers of challenges we feel in the satisfaction we feel just in waking up every day and feeling like we've met that deep sense of purpose. And so I do. I think core values are very underrated, under-discussed. And I think that this is a huge piece that as we move forward into 2022 and beyond, that we're going to start to see companies really reflect on what that means for them.
Yeah. If you're listening, I want you to know she said probably one of the most important things you'll ever hear. Now, if you're driving and you're like, oh, yeah. I want you to pull over and make a note because Katrina, here's what I'm 51 and I'll just say this out loud.
It's you look most, fabulous for 51, well, by the way.
Thank you. It's great. My wife is keeping me on track. And so, but here's the thing is like, you said an important thing, did it really show up? So we just started doing this. We've always been, you know, we have 6 core values and so I have them on everything and we call them out during team meetings, like which core value showed up. But here we have a new team member. And she has been keeping track of when they're showing up and assigning a name and an instance to them.
Wow.
So every Monday we get a report. There were 12 instances where this Corvette, and she goes, when so-and-so did this. Now, the first time she did, I'm like, this is amazing, but she only mentioned my name twice, you know? And I was like, I got a little competitive. I was like, whoa, sure. Everybody else is being mentioned and called out for this. I better get my gear. But the appointment, you don't have to do that, but like having a system to call them out when they come alive to prove everyone, these are absolutely alive. And I've heard practices, they have a core value champion of the week where they give an award, you know, to the, you know, so I don't care how you do it, but what you just said, that is the key, because the more you lean into core values, the less crazy stuff you have going on around you. Would you agree?
Sure. Oh, absolutely. And you're right. It starts from the top. You know what I mean? It really starts from the top and it moves down. What is that saying? A fish
stinks from the head down. Or I have 30 of these. The bottleneck is at the where in the bottle?
It's the
at
top.
You never see a bottle with the bottleneck at the bottom. It's at the top. You know,
that's so funny.
The apple doesn't fall far from the what? You know, like
the tree. That's right. Yeah,
we could do a whole hour on this one.
That's all the isms, right? All the isms of growing up in the Midwest.
As goes the leadership team, so goes the what? Team, rest of the team. You know what I mean?
That's well, and that's I think that's the layer to all of it. Is that when I, at least for me, when I'm working with some of my clients, and they're saying these are our core values, and then you look at. So when you say we practice world-class dentistry, that's one of my favorites. We practice world-class dentistry. And I love that. Absolutely. Your clientele should know that you practice world-class dentistry. So tell me why your hygienists don't have instruments that they can sharpen anymore because you haven't bought them equipment in forever. I haven't even seen this ultrasonic, whatever this is. I don't even know what this is. And I've been practicing dentistry for almost 2 decades now. You know, I mean, why do you not have digital radiographs? Why is nobody wiping down the reception area and making sure that that's clean? It's a global health crisis. And I'm like, you know, picking up dust on the reception desk. So the idea being when we say to our employees, to our team members, these are our core values. This is what we stand for. Let's do activities. Let's talk about this. If you're a dentist, if you're a practice owner, that it begins with you. It begins with making sure that you are giving your team the tools and the resources to be able to follow through with those core values. And so I love that you're measuring that because it's so hard to measure those core values. How do you know when they're really being integrated or not, right?
Well, let me answer it from only my perspective. So I would argue, you know, we're going to be authentic. And I know
I like it.
World-class dentistry is not a core value. That's a very vague standard. For me, values, my coach told me this. Let's make this, core values are behaviors. They're not lofty feelings.
Sure.
They're behaviors that you have fully embraced, like all in attitude. That's a behavior. We before me, that's a behavior for us. Always be growing. That is a behavior. So it's not like world excellence, top notch, because nobody can all. And you know what? As you get older, you're like, I don't need the best. I just need people that are leaning in. And so as I've gotten older, I have surpassed the whole expert who doesn't want to play with everyone and they ride a broom to work. That is long gone. Now I need people leaning in or like, I just want to be here. I love what we stand for. I don't need perfect. I just need all in. So I don't know. Everybody's got to go on their journey for this, but like, it's really hard to hold a vague standard as a core value, you know?
I 100% agree. And I think to your point, it sounds great. And I love that that's being communicated to patients. But to your point, how do you integrate that from a measurement standpoint? And what is truly the definition of it? So I am 100% in alignment with you on what some of the challenges are when it comes to building out those core values or whatever the mission statement is of a practice.
Right.
The idea being, if we're going to talk about clinical excellence, and let's say that that is a provision of a core value, for example, or even if we are going to say, you know, integrity, you know, integrity, literally the definition of integrity is you would do the same thing or you would perform high level excellence, whether somebody is watching you or not.
Right.
So again, you know, that's another one that, you know, I'll start doing chart audits and I'm looking through and it's like, oh, that's interesting. This wasn't done. This wasn't done. This wasn't, it was a day that the doctor didn't need to come in and do an exam. So that's why none of these things got completed. And so the idea being, at what point do we in dentistry stop and correct these things. The challenge is for many dentists who are also the business owner, practice owner of one or multiple practices, do they have the time to be checking in on their team members and saying, you know, okay, so remember our core value was integrity. And when you skipped taking x-rays, when you skipped doing perio charting, when you skipped, you know, doing all these things for the patient, not only is this a legal issue because we don't have all the data that we need to safely treat our patients, but that's not what the standard of excellence is here in this practice. So it becomes this balancing act, right? We have to be able to convey what our expectations are. We have to be able to provide resources so that our team members can step into that. And on the back end, we have to be able to continually remind our team of the ways in which these core values will continue to show up. Totally. And I think that's a huge piece. But even going back to not even talking about a team, but talking about who we are as people, that's a deeper layer, a deeper cut, I think. And I think the issue for so long that we saw in education, particularly in dental and dental hygiene education, is the component of self-awareness. So is it my boss's job to tell me that I'm not doing a very good job of doing lower block injections? Or is it my job as the dental hygienist that every time that I do an inferior alveolar nerve block, that my patients never get numb? Right. And is it my job then as a self-aware clinician to say, I need to take coursework in doing mandibular blocks because that is not a skill that I have, or that's a skill that I need to sharpen.
Right.
So the idea of being education has really moved into this model of trying to create more of that awareness, because that has been a challenge, particularly when you talk about cerebral majors like dentistry, medicine,
yeah,
law. You know what I mean? That self-awareness piece can be a bit of a challenge.
It's a huge challenge. And so I think, gosh, you're talking my language. Like, so I'm a big Gary Vee fan. Now, I don't love his language. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
One of my favorite, if you're listening, is he spoke to the USC School of Business entrepreneurs or whatever. It's a 45-minute YouTube talk. I'm just going to warn you, it's the most vile lecture you've ever heard, but it is so good. And he said, If I could give you one piece of advice, I would take every test on the planet. I would find out as fast as possible what you suck at and get an expert's help on finding out what you suck at. And then you're going to go all chips in for the rest of your life on the things that you're good at and bring you joy, and you'll experience more success than anyone else. And I love that. Now, how he goes about that is so true. Now, Katrina, I have, like, this is an episode in itself because there are so many things I want to ask you about the clinical side, but like, this is my favorite stuff. So can I just ask you, let's say I'm a dentist. Okay, you come to my office. We do a lot. You know, I get it. But like, I've never done core values work. Like, okay, so I got this vision and this mission thing. Like, what would you say to me? Mm-hmm. I got this team. I got this practice going. I got partners now. Where do I start? Like, where do I start?
Yeah. And I think that's the common thing that I actually hear quite a bit. Where do I start? And I think the idea is, since you have a team, this is one of the things that I find to be so important. If your team is a part of the process, you have a mission statement, but now we need to start building out core values. There's always going to be more responsibility when they are the ones that built it, period.
Yes.
So I very much believe in this concept of this being a team activity. You simply cannot write core values in like a 1-hour meeting. Right. I mean, you can scribble out a few of them, but this means the team has to get together and to say, what is important for us? What are behaviors that are needed in order to better serve our patients? Where are we going? What's our 5-year plan? What's our 10-year plan? You know, I even walk through, what does a patient, I put this on Instagram the other day, and it was very interesting. What does a patient in 100% health look like? What does that patient look like?
Right.
And if that's what 100% health looks like, then what are our responsibilities for all of the other patients that are 75% health, 60% health? What is our responsibility? How can we move those individuals as close to 100 as possible? And by the way, how many patients truly are 100% health in your practice? The idea being, we know where we want to go, but we have this lofty idea, the concept of a world-class dentistry, right?
Right.
Well, that's a lofty idea. What is world-class dentistry? What is a healthy patient?
Right.
You know what I mean? What is a well-producing practice?
Right.
We have to be able to define what that is and what that looks like. And we have to be able to come together as a team, because for one dental hygienist, they may have one idea of what a healthy patient looks like or what a high level, high tech practice looks like. I remember I was working in a low socioeconomic status practice for a long time, and they had just gotten a panel machine. So the standard at that time was, we're just going to take a panel and four bite wings instead of an FMX on everybody, which I have my own opinions on, by the way. Mm-hmm. But that was the standard. It's a, Medicare, Medicaid practice. And so these patients would come in and they would get a pano and four bite wings. And they thought, this is the most high-tech thing. You're taking up an image of my whole mouth with this one, you know what I mean? And they were blown away by that. For that population, for those individuals, that was considered very high tech. So we have to understand that there's a spectrum across the board when people have an awareness. Or sometimes, I remember when I graduated from hygiene school, people said, when you first graduate, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
So it's like, oh my gosh, you know? So that idea being, if a dentist says, I don't know where to begin, I think the place that we need to begin is by sitting down with the team and having a dialogue about, where are we?
Right.
Where are we going? And what are behaviors that are important for you as a team member for collaboration? We build out these core values based on what the team says, because when they are part of the building of that process, they take ownership over it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, everybody's got to be involved. And mm-hmm. I mean, the hard part for us was we had to let them, our coach said, you got to let these bake for a year. Like, you're going to start and then you're going to put them in the oven. You got to let them bake to see if like they're real, because, and I'll just say this, like, it's never a clean journey, but at the end of the game, your favorite people care about the same things. Like,
yes.
Those are your favorite. Your least favorite people, I've tried forever, but we're just never going to get on the same page. So however you get there, and I would also just throw this element in the room, is like, and again, I'm a wuss, so I'm not the best at this. You might have two or three team members that just you don't enjoy working with, and engaging them in the dialogue about what our core value, they might bring up something. You're like, no. And
right.
You have to be the steward of the organization. You know, I have four kids. Sarah and I have four kids. It's like, I would love to embrace consensus, but it's not healthy. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
People think consensus is healthy. No, it's not. Like, collaboration is healthy, but
yes.
Consensus is not. Now, I want to go back to one more thing, because oh my gosh, we could unpackage this whole
thing. I know.
Wait, let me talk about the why. Because if you're a hygienist, let's say we come up with a core value that is like 100% health, if that's even attainable. What you said earlier in the episode is so true. Now, in these difficult moments, because I got Mrs. Finelli in the chair, and I would probably put her at 30%. I got to tell her some tough stuff. And if you can lean into your core values, it isn't between you and I. We got the third person in the room, which is the flag of what we, can you speak to that? Am I on the right track here?
Yes, 100%. Yes. And it goes back to your philosophy.
Right.
So I always say this, I do a lot of programmatic content on patient communication. And, you know, it's so funny because people will ask me, is there like a magic word or like a secret sauce or something that you say to the patient to get them to accept treatment? Because remember, part of my job is I work in the surgical suite with the doctor, or I'm seeing new patients. I'm bringing the patient, periodontal disease is asymptomatic. The patient is not in pain. It's completely normal society-wise to bleed from the mouth. Like, people don't think it's that big of a deal if you bleed from your mouth. So now I have to take these patients who were sent over and have no idea why they're here in a perio practice, and I have to get them to accept advanced surgical treatment that will likely be painful.
Right.
They'll walk out with stitches in their mouth. You know what I mean? They're not gonna be able to brush their teeth for 2 weeks. And somehow I have to get them to say yes. And so for me, the challenge becomes, what words do you use? What vernacular do you use? Is there secret sauce? And I always say, there is not a secret sauce. If there was a magic word, if there was something that I could tell everybody, like, if you use this one word, your patient is going to go, well, eureka, I had no idea. Let's go in and get started. Sure, I'll sign this multi-$1,000 treatment plan. If I knew that one word, Kirk, I would be traveling around with Tony Robbins right now sharing that word. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't be like sitting here at home drinking a kombucha by myself. So the idea being, when you get patients to say yes, or when you get a patient like you were referring to, where that patient is at 30% health and we want to move the needle, and that patient now is struggling to understand because my mouth has always been this way, or just genetically, yes, everybody in my family loses their teeth to gum disease, or whatever that holdup is for that patient. The idea is it goes back to your practice philosophy. Patients know. They're smarter than we give them credit for. They know when you're telling them something and you're concerned.
Right.
Versus telling the patient, oh, it looks like you have exposed root surfaces today. It sounds like we should do a fluoride varnish. Fluoride varnish is a really good treatment. It really helps to remineralize the tooth structure. We have two different flavors, bubble gum or mint. Let's go ahead and get started today. Your insurance doesn't cover it. It'll be $35 out of pocket. Do you want to do it or no?
Wow, right? That was fast. Like, you know,
but the idea being, like, patients know the difference between you selling them something versus you sitting down, you know. And I will say, we lost my mom to an airway obstructive disorder. So I don't work in a clinic right now where we do sleep studies or airway treatment at all. We're a perio practice, but I do a Mallampetty classification on every single one of my patients. I get a pulse ox on every single one of my patients. And if I see an airway issue, I sit eye to eye, knee to knee, I take my loops off, and I look the patient straight in the eye and I say, Mr. Jones, your airway is very closed. This is a very serious matter. We do not treat that here. But I would like to send you to somebody who can address this. If you have family members who care about you, they would want you to have this evaluated immediately. That's it. That's the conversation I have, because patients can read when you're concerned, when you care, and when it matters. And that, Kirk, goes right back to your core values. That goes back to, it's important to me. I'm not here selling you something you don't need. This is your health. That's why you're in this chair. It is my responsibility to serve you and to get you to as close as I can to 100% health.
I love that. I always say, there are people that fix teeth and there are people that change lives. It's not the same business. And what you're doing, you're saving lives. Now, the other thing that's blowing up in my brain is you're addressing the two most important opportunities, or, you know, important conversations. You're addressing the inflammation conversation and the airway conversation with, if you're a young dentist, these are, well, you know, the inflammation thing has not, now we have more research more than ever. So my point in putting those are the two most important opportunities to understand as a dentist, to understand this is a great profession. And then also, we have more research now than we've ever had. We used to say it could be, it might be.
That's right.
Now we know it is, you know? Mm-hmm. So what would you say to a young dentist who's listening right now? What are the opportunities that exist in what you just said?
Oh my gosh. Yes. There's so many opportunities. The first thing I'm going to say is continue to explore, continue to look beyond what it is that you were taught in dental or dental hygiene school. When I was in hygiene school, I was taught if a patient has a TMJ issue, give them an occlusal guard and send them on their way. Well, we're just putting a Band-Aid on it, right? There are now, you know, pieces of research out about acupressure, acupuncture, you know, that we should be leaning on our oral myofunctional therapists to aid in TMJ issues or parafunctional habits. We are taught the bare minimum to not kill somebody and to pass our boards. It really goes into the fact that there is a massive world out there. There are some incredible, I've got the book actually up here, Beat the Heart Attack Gene.
Oh yeah.
By Bale Donin. I just did their preceptorship a few months back. And I mean, they are brilliant.
Yes.
Some of the things that, you know, I took away from that, that I've infused into my clinical practice, it blows my mind. And there's still, to your point, so much more that is out there. So any new doc or young hygienist who's just graduated, anybody who has a deep love and a passion for this, know that the information out there is endless. But what we're doing is we're working to rebrand dentistry. We're working to rebrand the way that society sees dentistry. Because yes, we are in different buildings from doctors, from hospitals.
Right.
So we are seen as a different entity. And we are a practice where, yes, we do provide therapeutic care, fillings, crowns, periodontal therapy, inflammatory treatment, but we also provide elective therapy, veneers, whitening. And so we do have to help color this picture that, yes, there are procedures that you can get done that are elective, that are more cosmetic in nature. that this procedure, your periodontal treatment, is not an elective procedure. This isn't like an optional thing, right? This, you must treat this. And so what we've done is it's taken a while, Kirk, and I'm sure you've read the research on it, but like in the 1900s, if you had a toothache, you'd see your barber. Your barber was the one that did all of your dental work. And then all of a sudden we started kicking out, after Alfred Fones in 1914, started kicking out dentists here in the United States, around the world. Then it was, hey, by the way, you should go and see somebody who's specifically trained in how to manage the oral cavity.
Right.
And that created this concept where people would go to the dentist only when they were in dental pain. So what happens? The 1950s roll along. And now here we've got Bucky the Beaver, the spokes beaver for the Ipana toothpaste commercial, brush with brand new iPant, right?
I remember that. Yeah.
Remember that? And so at the end of the commercial, he said, brush with a brand new iPana and see your dentist twice a year.
Yep.
And we did that because in the 1950s, we wanted people to start moving into this preventive dentistry concept. That was the 1950s. Yep. It is now 70 years later, and still people come in twice a year because that's what we believe to be normal. You know, people believe that you get a good checkup if your dentist says no cavities. Well, what if it was about more than just no cavities? What if it was about, do you have inflammation in your mouth? Because oral inflammation is the second most frequent modifiable inflammatory condition around the world, second only to obesity. So do you have inflammation in your mouth? Let's look at your airway. Let's look at your tethered oral tissues. Let's look at your pathology. You know, there are things that we can see in the mouth that could tell us, or could color a picture about our patient's systemic risk. Yeah. So we need to move away from this concept of no cavities, you look good, into elevating our clinical practice. And we're working to rebrand dentistry so that patients expect that from us, as they should. So stay curious and continue to explore opportunities to elevate your work for your patients.
I love that. You know, you talk about inflammation being one of the biggest things that plagues dentistry, but also the seven most expensive words plague dentistry, because you're saying all that, yes. You know what they are. Like, that's the way we've always done it. Like, I've heard that probably 7,000 times. I'm like, that's a bad way to do anything. And I think what you're doing is you're just giving people such a great, I mean, number one, you're giving them a great why. You know, mm-hmm. You're an entertaining educator. Edutainment is a word that goes around. I mean, you're making education fun. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I've been to a lot of perio lectures and like my buddies were like, wake up. I'm like, oh my gosh, did I miss a half hour of that? And they're like, yeah, you did. And you were snoring. And I'm like, no, the thing about Katrina is you'll be like, whoa, you bend our brains. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm on slow up here, so like I'm on this 5-second delay. I'm
hardly.
Like, wait a minute, what? I gotta rewind that. That was really good, and I just think we're in a different age now where it can't be information. You got to inspire us. You got to tell me a story. Mm-hmm. You got to help me understand the why. Like, if I understand the why behind this, now I can muster up a little bit more, you know, support for the concept. And you got it in, you're using all my favorite stuff in this pot. Like, curious is one of my favorite, you know, this. Now I want you to go back to what you just said. Curious is one of my favorite words, because anyone that's curious, you go, that's one of my favorite. I have found, this is my experience, the least curious people I ever meet are probably my less favorite. My most favorite people are just curious. They're curious about you, conditions. How does this work? Why is that? What's your mom doing? How's your kids? How is this? They are less interested in telling you what they've learned and how important they are. They're more interested in you. Tell me about why you use the word curious.
So I'm 100% in alignment with that. In fact, I was just saying to somebody the other day, I don't know if it's just like in my mid-30s, you know, when you get to that age where you're like kids these days, you know?
You're like, not there yet. Come on.
I feel like I'm there. I like every day I'm turning into my father, I feel like. But, you know, I'm getting to this point where I look at my circle of friends. I look at the people that are in my life, and all of them are curious humans. Right. Like, they are wildly passionate and excited, and they want to learn it. And they're respectfully curious. Yeah. So it's like, oh, I didn't see it that way. Tell me a little bit more about that. Or, oh gosh, I didn't realize that it was this way. What is it that you have read that brought you to that conclusion? You know, I surround myself with curious people all the time. And that curiosity, I think, is, it's not having not being fearful. You know, it's the fact that I want to understand something that is bigger than me or is outside of me.
Right.
And I think that curiosity is the opposite of the age old, that's how we do things here. The concept of that's how we do things here drives me crazy, because it sounds to me like what you want is for us to stay in neutral and not go anywhere. And we're going to corroborate, we're going to make it okay that we're not moving forward because that's just how we've always done things here. And the reality is that is not, that's not where we're going. That's not the world that we're in right now. We have to constantly be moving. Dentistry is one of those professions that has notoriously been seen as a profession where we are stuck in neutral and we don't go. You know, happens in medicine, it takes 10 years for it to trickle down into dentistry, you know? And the reality is, even integrating new pieces of equipment or new technology, I can't tell you how many, especially hygienists, have this fear about telling the patient that now they need to have a treatment done. Yes, you were in 6 months ago, and I acknowledge that you were in 6 months ago. Thank you for coming in 6 months ago. But today you have a disease and we need to treat that disease. That may or may not have anything to do with what happened 6 months ago in our last practice. And yet we have this fear around it. However, in medicine will be the first to tell you, we have a brand new piece of equipment.
Right.
When you get your mammogram, we don't need to cause pain anymore. We can see everything we need to see with this brand new piece. How great is that? And medicine celebrates it. Other professions celebrate the fact that this curiosity, this driver for how do we continue to do better? How do we see those cells sooner? How do we see them faster? How can we detect that sooner so that we can have a better conversation?
Right.
That is where everyone else is going. And dentistry has to be on that trajectory. We are responsible for that now. And so that age-old concept of I'm not curious because I'm just comfortable where I am, we have to start getting comfortable with being uncomfortable in order to continue to propel the profession forward.
I love it. And you might say dentistry's in neutral, but you're getting us out of neutral and hitting drive here. And I love it. Keeping us moving. You know, and I'm sure you've seen this too. You love what you're doing. You're presenting information and keeping people on their learning edges. But the biggest problem isn't so much the getting the new information in, it's flushing the old information out and really speaking to that, you know, because I don't think a lot of people would debate like what you present and go, you know, you're like, they're just freaking out that like, wow, that's such a pivot for us type of a thing. Mm-hmm. Would you say that's mostly true, kind of true, not so true for you?
100%. It's totally true, especially in dentistry. One great example of that is there's a paradigm shift, or has been a paradigm shift in periodontal instrumentation. When I was in hygiene school, I was taught you scale and root plane that root surface until it is glass smooth. Your instructor will take an explorer and make sure that root feels absolutely glass smooth. That's what many of us were taught to do. Well, the paradigm now is you remove deposit, you remove calculus, but you're not going to intentionally remove root surface. You're not going to intentionally remove cementum because we need cementum in order to get healing via the lung junctional epithelium. Okay, a lot of sciencey words. The whole point being, now I have to stand in front of rooms of colleagues who were taught this is how you have to instrumentate. And now I have to tell them that's actually not how you have to instrumentate anymore. I'm going to take what you've been doing your entire career and I'm going to tell you, you've been doing it wrong and we need to do it a different way.
Wow.
And although they get it, although they understand the science behind it, although they understand, okay, I get it. We do need cementum because that's how we get healing via the lung junctional epithelium. And when I'm gouging that root surface, I'm tearing cementum and cemental tears makes it that much more difficult for healing. We still can't get over the fact that for forever, this is how we practiced and patients were healing. They were getting improved pocket depth readings or probing depth readings. They were seeing a reduction in bleeding. So is it really bad what I've been doing? What if I just keep doing that? Will Katrina Sanders, who spoke in Seattle last month, know that I'm still continuing to do it this way? It's integrity. Right. Who's watching me? Who's going to know if I've changed my paradigm or not? And so you're absolutely right. It's a huge challenge. I posted something on Instagram the other day. The end point of our instrumentation is not when the root is glass smooth. It's when you see that the inflammation has resolved. And I had a hygienist contact me, slide in my DMs, and she said, this may sound like a dumb question, but how do you know that the inflammation has resolved? And I said, this is a fabulous question.
This is
a good question, because I fear that the vast majority of my colleagues probably couldn't answer that question either. So it's not a dumb question. This is a fabulous question. And I said, if with your permission, I'm not going to use your name, but I want to actually pose this question. I want to put it out there. And it was incredible. Nobody knew. How do you really know that you've resolved inflammation? We're not taking blood work on our patients right now to know if their C-reactive protein levels have dropped. We're guessing half the time just based on, you know, probing depth readings, which can be subjective from time to time. So it's just one of those things where it's like what we've been doing, we've been stuck in this rut. And yet when we try to move out of it, some of that resistance is the fact that while people do understand it and it makes sense, is it really enough to disrupt their day-to-day? Is it enough to disrupt what it is that they do every hour on the hour when they're treating patients that have this disease process? And yet the question becomes, are we really helping society? What would our patients say if they knew that we were playing a guessing game about if we removed all of their calculus or not? What if our patients knew that half the time when our doctors come in for an exam, that the hygienist has done the vast majority of the checks for decay because doctors so busy moving in and out of operatories so quickly? You know, what if our patients knew that the vast majority of us had no idea if we resolved inflammation or not?
Yeah, that is such a powerful question.
Yeah.
I mean, again, you're like talking about, like, I've always thought the question, I don't know who said this, but the question is the answer. You know, like, let's lean into good questions, because she asked you a phenomenal question. And that came from a good place. Like,
yes.
And it keeps us on our learning journey. Now, I don't even think we fleshed out the most important topic.
That's
I love this. Now, again, I love this term, and I'm going to use it with you. I'm going to have you back. I'm voluntolding you to come back again and again.
Yes.
And we're going to cover things that you love talking about, so because I know you can add value on anything. And then I'm also voluntolding you to come here and do a workshop, which I'll figure out.
Now, I would love that.
I want people to know who you are. So let me just say this. If you're a study club director and you haven't had her speak, what are you thinking? Like, what are you doing? Like, she will crazy excite the room. It'll be fun and people will thank you. So make sure I'm going to put her email address. Now, if you've been listening to this whole episode, we're going to put all the show notes in there and you can just flip up and you'll see all the notes. You can just click on them, but reach out to Katrina. How else can I follow you? Like how do I get a hold of you? Where do I find more of Katrina Sanders?
Oh my gosh. Well, Katrina Sanders is everywhere, I feel like, or at least my assistant will tell you that. So you can email me, Katrina@KatrinaSanders.com. My website, www.KatrinaSanders.com. And you can find me on social media at The Dental Wine Genist.
Yeah. I'm highly I don't even know how Instagram really works. And I follow like a handful. Like, I love watching your bro. I'm like, what the heck is she doing now? Oh, that looks fun. I don't even know what that is. Wow, that looks cool. Like, it's always fun. It's interesting. So, no, I'm just excited to have you here. So I really appreciate you being on today. And so, thank you. Thank you for being on. Stick around while I say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for listening. Hey, if you enjoyed today, which I know you did, do us a favor. Just share this episode with your friends. Leave a rating for our podcast. I've never asked for that really before, but I don't even know what I'm doing here, but like, this is so fun. And keep sending us suggestions for things that you want to hear from Katrina, because I'll voluntold her back again and again and again. And I want to get into some of the other things that you're so passionate about. And we'll keep doing this over and over again. But thank you guys for all listening. And until we see all of you guys, keep watching or listening to the Best Practice Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. And there you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.